You gotta clear your mind. She knows what scares you. It has from the very beginning. Don't give it any help. It knows too much already. 7 days.
Listen, asshole!
No, you listen, you little bitch. You hang up on me again, I'll gut you like a fish.
I didn't mean to startle you.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 151. And look, I'm sorry I haven't released an episode in the last couple of weeks, but unfortunately, as they say, true life gets to you after a while and you actually have to take a step back and do the things that you need to deal with. But I am back this week. And look, I have tried, over the last couple of weeks, I have tried to watch a movie, any movie that might actually be good for the Horror Crypt Podcast. Now, I started with this because we've just celebrated Easter. So for those of you who celebrate Easter, very happy Easter just gone. But I was racking my brains. I was trying to figure out what movie could I watch. And I wanted to go with an Easter theme. So I went and found a movie called, it's so bad. Even now I have a hard trouble of saying it, but it was actually Easter Bunny Massacre. Now, I watched it, and as far as I'm concerned, this movie was a student movie if the students didn't know what they were doing. And students usually know what they're doing when they do a student movie. This was so bad. I mean, I watched it and I'm like, okay, this is, because it's at one stage during the movie, it looks like they ran out of money for just common things like maybe makeup for the characters, because the girls seem to all be bringing their own dresses to the movie, and the guys had very bad skin. There was no real touching up of blemishes and stuff like that. It was really quite bad. And even though there was a little bit of a twist at the end, I'm like, okay, all right, well, we could go with this, but let's see part two. Now, the other one, obviously, the Easter Bunny Massacre part two, they couldn't even get the name of the part two right. They just had Easter Killing. And it's like, Easter Killing is not the same as Easter Bunny Massacre part two. But I watched the second one, and it was the most excruciating thing, to the point where I've just decided, no, I am not going to put this through the Horror Crypt Podcast. So I thought to myself, okay, well, we're not going to go with that one. Let's go back to 1968. And I went to Day of the Dead, which was obviously a George Romero movie. And it was about as bad as what I thought it was going to be. I literally couldn't do that one either. And on top of the fact that, you know, real life got in the way of doing my podcast, I'm like, what the hell am I going to do for the podcast? I can't go 3 weeks without having an episode. What am I going to do? Well, I found a movie, and I'd bought it a long time ago, and I just hadn't got around to watching it. It is from 2012. It is a supernatural horror film. It is really, really a good movie. I've got part two. I'm dying to see it. But I was really surprised. It had a great twist at the end that you definitely did not see coming. What movie am I talking about? I'm talking about the movie Sinister.
New details today in the grisly murders of a local family found earlier this week.
I didn't want to move here.
We couldn't afford to live in the old house anymore. Plus, the new story I'm writing is here.
Is the story a good one this time?
I'm going to write the best book that anybody's ever read. I got a really good feeling about this. You gotta be kidding me. Family hanging out. Barbecue 79. That's the family who lived here.
You think these are serial murders?
I don't know. First one I found dates back to the 60s. The only link between all these cases is the symbol.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Christians believe that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm. Children exposed to the images were especially vulnerable to Bagul's abduction.
Sweetheart, what are you doing?
Painting. I wanted to paint her picture.
Who are you talking about?
Stephanie. She's delivering.
Trevor?
What's the matter? What's happened?
Get the kids. Pack the car. We have to leave here now.
Now, one thing I absolutely love about this movie is that it has an ending where you don't see it coming. Even though they put all the little things in front of you and they say, okay, this is what's going to happen. Do you remember it? But you don't, because they go, and they don't go so quickly to the point you go, oh, for God's sakes, just slow down a bit. You know, they're not racing through this movie. This movie runs for 109 minutes. Now, there are parts of the movie that you'll sit there and go, man, is there any, you know, real chemistry between the main character, which is Ethan Hawke, and his wife? There's not a whole lot of chemistry that I can really see. And he doesn't really interact with his children all that much. There are certain times that he is involved, but not to the extent that you'd think that there is something really underlying in this family. Now, I'm going to read this verbatim as they wrote it down. So, this movie was premiered at SXSW Festival on March the 20th, 2012. It was released in the United Kingdom on October the 5th, 2012, and the United States on October the 12th. Critics praised, I should say, its acting, direction, cinematography, and atmosphere, but panned its use of jump scares and other horror cliches. Yes, there were certainly some great jump scares. One I will definitely say, if you are watching this movie, is that you will see a scene where this person, and we'll find out as we go along who it is, that grabs a lawnmower, and you basically follow the lawnmower, and then something comes out of the screen, and it is a jump scare that you don't see coming because you're so hyper-focused on that lawnmower. But believe me, if you get a chance to watch this movie, watch out for that, because that'll scare the shit out of you. It really did. I mean, even I jumped at one stage. I mean, I am desensitized to the best of everything. I mean, there is really no movie that I could sit there and go, oh my God, that jump scared me out of my seat. No, this movie doesn't do that. Well, not for me anyway, but it doesn't do that. But this scene where you've got the lawnmower going across the lawn, yeah, it will actually do something to you. But there is some interesting little jump scares. Now, when it was released at the box office, now the only thing that I can see that the budget was only $3 million. So you think to yourself, okay, well, let's hope it's going to make its money back. It did. It blew it out of the water. $87.7 million at the box office on a $3 million budget. And I think that's a pretty good return for what the filmmakers decided to put out. And it's a great movie. I mean, there's no shortcuts around this. Vincent D'Onofrio is actually in this movie. He's uncredited, but he is a great part of the movie as well. He's not in it for a huge amount of time, but what he does bring to the movie, as far as I'm concerned, great. He's a great actor. He really is. Now, apparently, this movie has developed a reputation for scariness and is considered a cult classic. Well, isn't it terrible to think that 2012 you can get a cult classic now? 2012 for me is like a sneeze, for God's sakes. A 2020 study by Broadband Choices named Sinister the scariest film ever made. And I thought to myself when I was reading this, really? I don't think so. I thought The Exorcist is still up there. Well, apparently, this is based on an analysis of viewer heart rates. So maybe it was. Maybe it is the most scariest movie ever made, but I don't believe so. And there is a sequel that was released in 2015. I do actually have that. I am going to watch it because I'm really interested to see where they go from this movie into the sequel. But look, I really enjoyed this movie, and I don't usually give the you know, rating right now, but on a scale of 0 to 5 buckets of blood, how do I get, from 0 being how do I get the last 109 minutes of my life back, to 5, it was a perfect movie, and I'd watch it all over again. I won't say it's a 5, but I'm going to give it a pretty good 4.75. And the only reason that I'm giving it a 4.75 and I'm not giving it a 5 is because a lot of the interaction between Ethan Hawke's character and his wife, I don't consider them to be married. I mean, there is really no chemistry between them. You know, he is a writer. He's a true crime writer. His name is Ellison. And, you know, he is trying to get his family to where he believes that they can be, as in financial status and stuff like that. But really, the interaction between the children and the father, there's not a whole lot there, but there's definitely, with his wife Tracy, I really can't see that there's much chemistry in this dynamic, unfortunately. But they do move, into a home in a fictional town of Chatford, Pennsylvania. There is no place called Chatford, Pennsylvania. And they've got a 12-year-old son, Trevor, and their 7-year-old daughter, Ashley. And, of course, we find the opening of this movie is that you see a tree and you've got four people with hoods over their heads and hands behind their back, and they're suddenly hung from a tree, and then you get to see the word sinister. So it really shows you what you're in for as the movie starts up. And we do see that they have moved to this house, but unbeknownst to the wife, and of course the children, Ellison has moved him into the home where this family, the Stevenson family, were killed by hanging. So, you know, there is, and you'll find out if you watch this movie as you go along, that Tracy and Ellison, they do have obviously Ellison has done this before. He's moved them from different areas. Because he's a true crime writer, he really wants to absorb himself into the stories that he's telling. And so he has done this on the odd occasion where he's moved them into a house that might have had, you know, blood splatters all over the walls, or there's blood all over the place, and it's been, you know, it's been in the actual area. Or there have been a couple of houses down, but this is possibly the very first time that he's moved them into a home that has actually had this ghastly thing happen. And of course, he intends to write a biography about the case he had a huge amount of fame with a book by the name of Kentucky Blood, and it was a best-selling book, and he really wants to recapture that lightning in a bottle. He wants to be back on top. So this is one of the ways that he might actually succeed in getting to where he wants to be again. And he hopes to learn the fate of 10-year-old girl Stephanie Stevenson, who disappeared following the murders. And you do see that he's got this beautiful whiteboard. He's got a very, very nice office. It's an enormous office. And he does say to his family, you know, do not at any stretch of the imagination come into the room, because I've got this whiteboard up. It's got a lot of crime scene photographs and stuff like that. And he does write a little post-it note saying, where's Stephanie? Because when you see when you see the family being hung, there's only four people and she's number five, and Stephanie has completely disappeared. So they don't know where she is. So this is why he is trying to delve into this whole story of this case. So obviously, as you know, you're moving into a brand new home, you're putting boxes away and stuff like that. And Ellison goes up into the attic and he finds a box, which is basically a box containing Super 8 film, and there's reels of it. I think it's about like 6 or 8 reels of this, as well as a projector, and each of them is labeled as a home movie. So he decides, you know, out of morbid curiosity, well, I'm just going to go and find out what this is all about. So he sets it all up in his office and he starts, you know, watching these, and being the fact that they're all labeled home movies, he starts to watch the footage of different families being murdered in various ways, each with related, but with a very interesting little title, such as Mass Drowning Marked as Pool Party 66. And of course, each is performed by an unseen camera operator. Now, when I was watching this, my wife actually watched it with me, and she was like, well, maybe somebody is videoing it, like maybe one of the family members are videoing it. But when you get to see the way the camera is positioned and stuff like that, you start to see that, no, it's not a family member, it's not a father or a mother videoing it, because you see the mother or the father with the children in the actual, family dynamic. So it's someone, it's almost like a peeping Tom. It's like a perverted peeping Tom that's actually videoing the family. And of course, as we're going along and we're seeing this, he's seeing these rather disturbing images. So he, you know, shuts it off because he doesn't want his family coming into the office, because he hasn't locked the door yet. And as we're going along through the day, we've also got the kids going to their brand new school. But unfortunately, when the kids come home, the mother and the young son by the name of Trevor is having a bit of an argument about what he did at school that day.
What you're talking about?
I know more than you.
Go to your room, Trevor. And I don't want to see you again until dinner.
Hey, what happened?
Moms will react.
Your son is acting out again.
All right, what did he do?
Oh, so you're automatically taking her side?
Stop it. What did you do?
I drew a picture.
He drew a picture with a permanent marker on the classroom whiteboard. Oh, God. Tell him what you drew.
I drew a tree.
With four people hanging from it. Go to your room, Trevor. I need to speak to your father. His first day at school, Ellison, and he's already hearing the grisly details of your mystery.
What did he hear?
Exactly what he drew. That your book is about a family that was hung. Yeah. Christ, Ellison!
But that's all he heard?
That's not enough.
Look, I'm sorry he had to find out like this. All right, I am. But come on, I mean, it was bound to happen.
Really? That's your response? You think that makes it okay?
No, it doesn't make it okay, all right? Nothing about what happened to these people is okay. But bad things happen to good people, and they still need to have their story told. They deserve that much.
You're a real man of the people.
Oh, come on.
So as Ellison is going through all these very morbid videos or these Super 8 films that he's found, he starts to see this very strange symbol. That it's like a cult symbol that's in each of the killings. And of course, he also sees a very strange and very eerie man that's filming all these scenes. And so Ellison matches the footage of, and he looks to a murder in 1998, and it was the Miller family. And the Miller family, unfortunately, were killed while their 13-year-old boy, their 13-year-old son, Christopher, he actually vanished during the whole thing. So we're starting to see, and you actually get to see it, he sees the canister, and he goes in and watches the Super 8 movie, and you basically see that these kids, the family's all tied up, the kids are all tied up, and you don't see it directly, but you are watching it through his eyes because he's got glasses on. So this family is having their throat slit. So every time he goes and whoever it is that's killing this family, every time they go to kill someone, you actually can see the reflection in the glasses, until you get to one of the children that's about to have their throat slit, and he actually moves away from it, so you can't see it in his eyes. Because, and then of course, obviously the screen goes, it doesn't show you a clear outline of what's going on. You can see it very, very intermittently, but you don't really get to see what's going on, which is a good thing because you don't want to see children being killed. So he decides that he's going to go and start investigating, and he finds an old news report with regards to the disappearance of Christopher.
New details today in the grisly murders of a local family found earlier this week. Police have released this photo of Christopher Miller, the missing 13-year-old son of William and Penny Miller. The Millers, along with their younger son, were found stabbed inside their home, and police now are asking for any information that could lead to Christopher's return or the apprehension of any suspects involved in this vicious multiple murder and child abduction.
Now, one thing I love about this movie is it really brings you along for the ride. It doesn't give you a, you stay here, we'll force feed you what's going on. It actually brings you in to the movie. And at one night, Ellison's working because he works at home, so he's got day and evenings to work whenever he wants to. Anyway, he's working away, and he hears a noise in the attic, and of course he goes to investigate like you would, because it's a brand new home. You don't know you're not comfortable with all the noises that your house would make if you've been there for a while. And of course, as he goes up into the attic to find what the noise is, he finds in the reels, because you've got a box with the canister lids, you've got the lid that actually is put onto the box. And inside the lid, he sees childlike drawings depicting the killings with an eerie figure called Mr. Boogie, also present. So it's like, oh, okay, so not only have you got these canisters of all these ghastly killings, but you've also got a child writing down each of the killings with, mum, dad, such and such, such and such. Obviously, with every killing that happens, these kids are disappearing. So this is why Ellison is so hot with not only trying to find out where Stephanie is, but now he's got another person. Where the hell is Christopher gone? Because he has disappeared. So it's like all these killings, one person is taken from the family, and it's unfortunately a child. So now, like everything that goes on in this movie, you've got to have fans. And there's a local deputy. He is an absolute super fan of Ellison. And he notices in his book, the Kentucky whatever it was, I've got to look to see which one it was, the Kentucky Blood. He finds that there was a consultant, like a police officer, that Ellison was being consulted. You know, like he would actually ask for crime scene photographs and this and that. So this deputy, he decides that, you know, this is a great idea. I might actually be able to help you. And, you know, you can first see that, you know, this poor old Ellison's like, I don't really think I... And then the light bulb goes off and he's like, yes, actually, you might. You might be able to help me with this. And he starts to discuss, you know, the disappearances of the children in every murder. And this is... And, of course, he'd also taken a photograph of this Mr. Boogie that happens to be in two of the canisters that he's actually seen. So he actually blows that up and puts it onto his whiteboard, and this is where the police officer slightly is looking and trying to just chat with Ellison about, well, what do you think, you know, who do you think that is?
Who is that?
I don't know. That's what I'm hoping to find out.
You think these are serial murders?
Maybe. More ritualized than necessarily serial, but really spread out, and not just regionally, but over time. The first one I found dates back to the 60s.
The 1960s?
Yeah.
Wait, that would put the guy, what, in his 70s?
Or his 60s.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now look at the methodology. Toxicology reports some cases the killer drugged his victims.
Well, with what?
Well, they couldn't tell for sure. But by drugging them, the killer removes his need to overpower them. Here he used a tree branch to do the heavy lifting. In Sacramento, he lit family on fire. In St. Louis, he slit their throats. And the first family, he drowned.
Drowning? You never said anything about anyone being drowned.
The only other significant link between the murder cases is that in each instance, the killer murdered the entire family except one, a child, which he took with him. That and this symbol appears in several of the crime scenes.
That looks like something from out of the occult. Look, you might want to call the university. There's a professor over there, Professor Jonas. He's an occult crime expert, and the state police bring him in on some of the weirder stuff.
I think this qualifies.
So where do you think that drowning happened?
That's what I need you to find out.
So this is where the movie really starts to pick up. At this stage, we've actually just been seeing a lot of the murders. And as I've said to you before, there is a scene. I'm not going to talk about it because if you get a chance to see it, you will love it. There is a scene in one of the murders that is happening that you see this. The camera is, the camera person is walking into a garage. It's pissing with rain outside. And this camera person happens to grab the, and it's really only a very small, it's almost a small little spotlight. And you see the person move the lawn mower onto the outside and then onto the grass. And then you start to see the lawn mower, this person pushing the lawn mower. And obviously it's running and it's in operation. So the blades are going and you can see that the lawn mower is just going across the lawn. And then something happens and it's such an amazing jump scare that I literally jumped. And it's like, wow, it takes a lot to get me to jump. It really does. So if you ever get to see the movie, should I tell you? Should I not tell you? Let's see if I should tell you. If you don't want to know, then don't listen to this. So as we are seeing that, you know, there's this lawnmower that's racing across the lawn and it's pissing with rain. It's dark outside. And as it's going, you suddenly see a child laying on the ground with duct tape around his mouth, hands behind his back, and you see the lawnmower go straight towards his head. And this is at this stage that the movie then focuses just on Ethan Hawke's character, and he literally jumps back, and he is just so horrified with what he sees, he turns off the projector immediately. So, yeah, there is an amazing jump scare in this movie that really gave me a little bit of, yes, 5 out of 5 for jump scares. Loved it, you know. Not the outcome of what that poor child went through, but it was one hell of a jump scare. So we start to see now that he needs some help. Ellison needs to find what the hell is going on. And obviously the police officer has said, listen, go and contact Professor Jonas. He knows all about it. So this is where Vincent D'Onofrio's character, Professor Jonas, comes in. And this is where Ellison contacts him through Skype and just asks him what the hell is going on. And with all the footage that he sent him, you know, has he got any idea about what he's looking at or what he's got himself into?
Professor Jonas?
Yes.
Hello. Hey, thank you for getting back to me so quickly. I appreciate that.
Of course. I'm a really big fan. I'm flattered that you knew
thank
that.
You.
Once I saw the photos that you sent, I knew exactly what cases that you were studying.
Wait, how would you know what cases I was looking at?
The symbol that you sent me isn't a pentagram. No, it's not something that you would see teenagers or a Norwegian black metal band paint on a wall in goat's blood to be edgy or to piss off the Christians. No, this is a little bit more obscure than that. Yeah, I know that the one in the hallway, that's from the late 90s in St. Louis. The other one, the car hood, that is from Sacramento. That's about 30 years ago.
Tell me about the one in Sacramento.
It's a symbol associated with the worship of a pagan deity.
A deity? What kind of deity?
A very obscure one, dating back to Babylonian times, named Bagul, the eater of children.
Did you say eater?
Yes, of children. Thank you, Jessica. The crimes that you're dealing with, they all have the element of a missing child, correct?
Yes, yeah. It's correct.
Well, Bagul eats children. Now, the fragments of stories that have survived, they all revolve around him needing the souls of human children to survive. Now, each story involves a different way that he lures or tricks these children away from the physical world and traps them in his own netherworld, and he consumes their souls over time. Now, any worship of this deity would include blood sacrifice or the wholesale eating of a child.
So you're saying the person that made this symbol is eating children?
Well, that would fit the stories. Now, of course, the few times that this symbol has shown up, none of the crimes have been related in any way to any of this. There's been another one, hasn't there?
I think so, yes.
Tell me everything you can.
So now the interesting thing about this movie is that I thought that it was going to be Ellison that was going to have the problem, as in being taken over by Bagul, because at one stage when he had frozen the movie and he'd actually had set up his video camera, very smart, he'd set up his video camera to video the Super 8 movie that's going on. That way he can freeze the movie and freeze the frame and see what's going on. At one stage he has, you know, frozen the movie, and he is doing something on his laptop to see, and the image then looks directly towards him and then looks back to where it was in the previous scene. So I thought it was going to be Ellison that was going to have the problem. I didn't realize that it was going to be the children that were going to be affected. Now, his son Trevor is having amazing amounts of night terrors, and obviously he's had them before. Worse than ever as far as Tracy goes. You know, she's saying that her son has never had these night terrors as bad as what they have been, and it's really centers around the fact that he has moved these people into, you know, this house. And like every great horror movie that we see, you know, you've got to have the strange noises throughout the house. And this is where, at one stage, Ellison's hearing footsteps and noises throughout the house one night. I mean, this guy doesn't sleep at nighttime. He's basically up on, in guarding the house because he's just, all the shit's going on. And one night, as everything is basically falling apart in the house, you've got ghost-like children, which are invisible to Ellison, that are the cause of all the noises that's going on. And one of them is actually appearing in Ashley's bedroom, which is the young girl. And of course, Ashley is absolutely freaking terrified looking at this kid, this ghost girl. And the ghost girl is basically putting her finger to her lips to say, you know, shh, don't say anything, you know. And later on, you know, obviously... Now, one thing I like about this movie also is the fact that... Ellison's very, very relaxed on his daughter, you know, her bedroom, and they've actually allocated a wall for her to paint on, to express herself. So, you know, she wants to paint whatever she wants to, but she's been told, you are only to paint in the bedroom, you are not allowed to paint anywhere else in the house. Unfortunately, this doesn't go very well, because even though he had said, only in your bedroom, not anywhere else, one day... we see that she's actually decided to go painting somewhere else, which leads to a very, very raucous argument about what the hell is going on in this house between Ellison and Tracy.
Ellison!
What's going on?
Your daughter apparently thought there wasn't enough room on her walls for her new painting.
Ashley!
No, that's not it.
What did we talk about? It was only gave you one rule. It was a big deal for us to let you paint in your walls. And what was it? What's the rule, Ashley?
Paint only goes in the bedroom.
And what makes you think you can paint out here?
I wanted to paint her picture, but she didn't want it in my room because that used to be her brother's room.
What? Who are you talking about?
Stephanie.
Who's Stephanie?
She used to live here. She's the one Daddy's writing his book about.
Ashley, go to your room and shut the door. What the hell were you thinking? Did you think I wouldn't find out?
Of course I knew you were gonna find out eventually, okay? But don't blame me for not telling you, okay? Because remember, you never wanted to know.
Don't you asked me if we were living near the house, and you said no.
Me if we were living two houses down from a crime scene.
No, don't you dare. We never should have come here.
You see, nobody died here, okay? It's not like we're sleeping where somebody was killed. It's not like they had to wipe blood off the walls for the open house.
You're saying it didn't happen here?
No. It happened in the backyard.
Oh, that is so sad. God, you think that makes a difference?
It does.
No, Ellison, it doesn't.
It does.
You have done some crazy shit in the past, but this definitely takes the cake. My God, what on earth possessed you to move
We've
here?
We've never been this broke before.
That's no excuse.
This place came on the market. It was a steal.
Gee, I wonder why. So what Trevor drew last week, that happened here.
Yes.
The previous owners of this home were hung from a tree in our backyard.
Yes.
Oh, that is so sick, Allison. And you let our little girl play back there?
Why shouldn't I?
Our son is having night terrors and drawing pictures of this crime at school. Our daughter just painted a little dead girl on our wall.
She's missing. Okay?
What?
She's missing. Technically, she's missing. They don't know.
I don't want to hear about technicalities. Do you understand what you've done this time? The kind of jeopardy you've put your children in, your marriage.
Yes, I do. I understand.
You won't do for your goddamn book. Apparently not. I guess this is all worth it to you.
What's worth it?
Putting your family at risk.
Risk of what? Of more paintings?
Don't. What? Your daughter.
My daughter has a father who loves her, who is always around, who encourages her to be herself. All right, the worst thing that has ever happened to her is one time she moved into a house where a family was killed. She found out about the murders, all right? So she felt sorry for the little girl, so she painted a picture. That's what she does. It's what she always has done.
So that's it.
What else do you want from me?
How about a home where we feel safe, Ellison? How about neighbors that don't hate us in a town where I can buy groceries without getting strange looks? How about a life that doesn't involve our kids drawing and painting the sick details of some horrific tragedy or working out their deep-seated anxieties by doing bizarre shit in the middle of the night? How about that? Would that be okay?
I can give all that to you. Yeah, I can just when I finish
that.
The book.
This book isn't for us.
Yes, it
it's
is.
It's for you.
Tracy, don't say that. Don't say that. That's not true.
It is true. That's there are plenty of other ways you can provide for this
family. Doing what?
So obviously, as you can hear, the entire thing is falling apart. The marriage is falling apart. The family is falling apart. But Ellison is still hell-bent on getting this book done. And he is just, he's hyper-focused on doing this. And of course, one night, you know, Ellison hears the film projector running in the upstairs in the attic. And he finds that there's a whole lot of children seated in the attic watching one of the films. And then suddenly, Bagul appears on the camera before basically physically appearing in front of Ellison. Of course, this is where Ellison, you know, falls back out of the attic and decides, that's it, I'm taking the camera, the projector, which is basically snuff films because it's all about these people being murdered, all these families being murdered, and takes them outside and destroys them in the fire. And he ends up by telling Tracy that that's it, we are moving back to our house. Now, during the movie, there was a little subtle thing that happens, and his young daughter... She says to, Ashley says to her mother, you know, can I take Daddy his coffee? And she's like, well, Daddy is very particular on his coffee, but she shows her how to make it. So keep that in mind as we go along towards the end of the podcast. So we see that, you know, they've decided that's it. We need to get out of this house. We need to get home to our original home because they haven't sold it yet. And we're going back to where we started from. We can't do this. So this is where it really starts to get good because Jonas sends Ellison, now back at his old home, historical images associated with Bagul, including the mysterious symbol and three symbolic creatures that Ellison has encountered at the Stevenson house, a scorpion, a snake and a dog, because he'd have all these three encounters during the time that they were actually at this house. So, of course, as we see that the early Christians believed that the image of Bagul served as a gateway for the monster to come from the spiritual realm into the mortal world. So it's like, okay. And we already knew that because he'd spoken to Professor Jonas about this. And, of course, the deputy had been calling Ellison. And Ellison had been really deciding I'm not going to answer the phone because that part of my life now is over. I'm out of the town. I'm away from the house and I'm back here now. I'm going to put this whole thing behind me. And the deputy keeps ringing, keeps ringing, keeps ringing. And finally, Ellison picks up the phone and the deputy's like, I'm sorry to call you, but I need to inform you that every deceased family had once lived in the house that the previous murders took place in. So it's like, okay. He also learns that from Professor Jonas, the pattern, each new murder occurred shortly after the family moved from the crime scene to the new home. And it basically traced back to the killing of the Martinez family by arson in 1979 after they moved from Sacramento, California, from the Portland, Oregon site from the 1966 drownings. And of course, by moving away from the Stevenson house, Ellison's now marked himself and his family as the next victims. And I love this part of the movie because as we're going along and Ellison has decided, I've burnt the films, I've burnt the projector, there's no chance in hell these things are ever coming back. He goes up to his attic because he's now back at his new home, his old home. Now he's moved back. He goes up to his attic and he opens up the attic door, goes inside, and there is a box. And it's the same box that he found in the Stevenson house. And he opens it up and there is all the movies not burnt. The projector is sitting there. And it's like, oh my God. And the new footage, and basically there's a little thing that now says extended footage. And I think this is where the movie that had been dangling this in front of your face all along finally reveals it. So the new extended cuts that they've got, he puts them all together. He splices them all together. And he starts playing them. And as he's playing them, the new footage depicts the missing children coming on screen following each murder, revealing themselves to be the murderers under the Bagul's influence. So it's like, oh my God. So each of the kids, so you've got the drowning. First of all, you've got the Stevenson hangings. And you see Stephanie come onto the screen after the people have been hung. And she's you know, you've got the mother, the father, the other children being hung, and she goes up to her father, she grabs onto his legs and swings, you know, back and forth, and then comes over to the screen, looks directly into the screen, puts her finger to her mouth as if to say shush, and then the screen then cuts to another scenario, which is there was a family that were burnt alive in a car, and you see the son come to the front of the screen, put his fingers to his mouth, say shush, and it disappears. The next scene was the family that were drowned in the pool. You see the little boy come over to the screen, put his fingers to his mouth, say shush, and jumps into the pool to have a swim. The fourth one was the family that were actually had their throat slit. Christopher comes over to the camera, covered in blood, looks at the camera, puts his fingers to his mouth, says shush, and then the movie cuts. I was like, oh my God. Now, as this thing is going along, Ellison has been drinking a coffee, obviously to keep himself up and to see what's going on. And Ellison suddenly becomes lightheaded and notices a green liquid at the bottom of his coffee mug, along with a note from Ashley that says, good night, Daddy, before losing consciousness. Of course, then he awakes. Now, this is a spoiler, so if you think you really want to see this movie, this is a spoiler. Don't listen any further. Go and watch this movie and then come back. But if you are not going to watch this movie and you want to know what happens, here we go. So you've got the note from Ashley saying, good night, Daddy. He loses consciousness. He wakes up to find himself, Tracy and Trevor bound and gagged on the floor. And Ashley, having been influenced by the spirit of Stephanie to fall under Bagul's control, approaches them filming with an 8mm camera and tells her family that she will make them famous again, and proceeds to slaughter the family with an axe. I mean, holy crap on a cracker. She then uses their blood to paint the childish pictures on the wall of the hallway, along with Bagul's symbol on the door, and Ashley views the films of her, basically looks at the film of her murders while drawing the killing in the lid on the home movies box. Of course, then all of the missing children stare at her through the movie, but they flee when Bagul appears. Bagul then lifts Ashley into his arms and teleports into the movie. The box of films sits in the attic of, obviously, of Ellison's old family home now. And now, along with not only the box of films that Ellison has watched, it is now accompanied by Ashley's reel titled House Painting 12. The movie then goes black, And that is the end of Sinister. I'm telling you, 4.75 is a great amount of, you know, out of 5, because it is a great movie. And I didn't see it coming. I didn't see Ashley as the killer. I really thought that all the people that had been killed was, you know, obviously there was this ghastly thing called Bagul. But I never actually thought that this was, because Bagul looked directly toward Ellison. So I thought Ellison was going to be the one that was going to be taken over. Now, even though Professor Jonas had said that it's the eater of children, I didn't think that Stephanie was going to get to Ashley and then have Bagul take over Ashley. So it was an amazing little holy crap moment at the end. But it was just, yeah, and the way that she drew the pictures, this entire family was not only slaughtered but decapitated, because you could see it was picture was mum, dad, and it was of her brother as well, Trevor. So it was really, really very, very well done. And just the fact that Bagul then appears behind her and she's in this trance and she's just picked up, and then she starts to be walked towards the the video or the movie camera or the projector towards the screen, and then suddenly goes into the screen. It's like, it's absolutely amazing. And it's in that actual house. So all the slaughter that had happened, so the murder is now, it's obviously it's been filmed, but the entire, all the ghost children and Ashley and Bagul are now in that home, in that movie. And it's, so it's really, whoever moves into that home next is going to have the same issues. And this is why I am very, very interested in seeing number 2. But look, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed Sinister. I highly recommend it if you want to go and watch it. And it's, yeah, it's a great watch. It'll be one of those movies that you'll definitely want to see time and time again. And I will say that I'll probably see this another couple of times throughout the year, because I just love the movie. It's just a great movie. But look, before I get finished on this podcast, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So there are a number of fun facts, and I'm not going to do all of them because I don't want to bore you to death, but this is a very interesting one. So at around about 27 minutes, the Pool Party 66 snuff film in Sinister was extremely difficult to film, according to C. Robert Cargill, and this is the director. The actors and actresses who played the doomed family were tied down to lawn chairs and pulled underwater in reality. And I thought to myself, wow, okay, so they were actually real actors and actresses. You didn't really see them. It didn't really matter who they were, because they were bound and gagged. And because it was a dark, you know, you're not really going to see them. But apparently they were really doing it. And the filmmakers had to be extremely careful that nobody was harmed while filming the scene took place. Further complications occurred while filming the killer underwater, which is Bagul, who is actually sitting or standing in the pool. He apparently had to wear weights and stay underwater for several seconds while he was filmed. Now, since the scene was being filmed entirely on Super 8 film, care had to be taken to ensure that the camera was properly rolling and that the cartridge and light meter were working. Otherwise, the scene would have had to be reshot a number of times. So, yes, that would absolutely be very, very annoying. Now, writer C. Robert Cargill got the idea for the script from a nightmare he had after watching The Ring in 2002. I don't know why that's so scary. Not really sure. This is a very interesting fun fact, and this is the last one that I'm actually going to do. So the family that was hanging on the tree were all played by stuntmen. However, when the scene was first done, the stunt coordinator botched the preparations for the scene, resulting in the actors being legitimately hung and choked. Fortunately, they all survived, and unfortunately, the coordinator was fired soon after. So, yeah, there is a lot of really interesting little interesting fun facts about this movie. As I said, there's too many to go through, but that's only just a couple that I could actually tell you. But look, thank you very much once again for coming to visit me, the Horror Crypt Podcast. Hopefully you are still enjoying this podcast. I'm enjoying doing it. I'm sorry over the last couple of weeks I didn't get around to doing it. As I said, unfortunately, real life had to intrude and I had to make that a priority. Not that you guys are not a priority, but believe me, I don't get paid to do this work, but the work that I actually do, I do get paid for. So I had to put that over priority of doing a podcast. So, but anyway, as I said, I'm back. I'm doing podcasts. It's all good. So there's no dramas at all. I will come back with another episode next week. And I really hope you enjoyed this one. If you want to reach out to me, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And obviously I've got my Facebook page, so I've got my Instagram pages, so you can follow me there with all movies that I'm doing. But, you know, I'm enjoying doing these movies, and I'm looking forward to doing better movies rather than the garbage that I have been doing of late. I mean, not that they're bad, but really trying to keep the motivation going, it was really hard to get going. And unfortunately, the ones that I had, the Easter one and the one from 1968, you know, I just can't do it. I physically cannot sit there and watch the movie. So I'm really glad I found Sinister, really loved it. And I'm going to do Sinister Part 2 at another date. But in saying that, thank you very much for coming to visit me, the Horror Crypt Podcast. And I will say, like I say every single week, until next week, I will creep you later.
That's tomorrow. And that is it for us today. Okay, I don't know. Whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter. I don't know what that is. I've never seen that.
No, there it is. We are going to do Sting, yeah.
Okay, but... Okay. Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
Okay. Ready? Sure.
There's no words there. To play us out. What does that mean? To play us out.
It's Sting is going to do... It's a video. Sting video.
What is
for credits?
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go, go.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is a...
Okay. In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today, and we will leave you with a... I can't do it.
Okay.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live.
Right.
Fucking thing sucks.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.